Lean Leadership Podcast, episode 68.
This is the Lean Leadership Podcast. Equip yourself with the tools for success in your team's lean journey by learning from the world's top lean professionals. Listen at the risk of improving with your host, Chris Burnham.
Today's guest is Crystal Davis. Crystal has over 20 years of proven lean experience in the automotive, beverage, and supply chain industries, and she has a STEM industry focus. Her client roster consists of Fortune 500 and Fortune 1000 companies, and Crystal has been formally mentored by Toyota Senseis and helped lead companies to award-winning results. The organizations that she's worked with have been recognized for operational excellence at the Lean Enterprise Institute Summit and Industry Week Best Plant. She has her BS in Industrial Engineering from Mississippi State University and earned her MBA at Samford University and is a certified Six Sigma Black Belt. She is a fellow podcaster and the host of the Lead Lean podcast on the IBGR network. Here's our guest today, Crystal Davis. Crystal, we briefly touched on who you were in the intro, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how lean and continuous improvement is a part of your life?
Absolutely, Chris. First, let me thank you so much for having me on. It's truly a pleasure to be here. And so just a little bit about what I do. I am currently operating as a CEO and founder, as well as a principal consultant for my company, the Lean Coach Incorporated. And we primarily work with manufacturing and supply chain companies. I don't need to tell anybody how, you know, much of a crisis we're in with supply chain. So we are definitely solving some really complex problems and excited to do that. And I'll say the other end of it is that we do a lot of coaching, a lot of work around leadership development and coaching. So, but thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, good deal. I am grateful that you brought up supply chain. I think there's a lot of misconceptions for people out there about what's in a supply chain, what affects a supply chain. And it's really affecting all of us right now with coming out of this recovery from a pandemic. So I'm glad that you're here, and maybe we can touch on that a bit in our conversation.
Absolutely.
Well, before we get started with the interview, we always ask our guests to share with us a quote or a mantra from one of their favorite leaders. So can you share with us what your quote is and why you chose it?
Absolutely. So this is very simple. It's thinking is required. And I believe the quote actually came from my sensei, Mr. Yamada, back in my days at Delphi. But at Delphi, we used to include it in every lean presentation. That was our final slide. Thinking is required. And that has stuck with me throughout my career.
That's so awesome. And it's, you know, three words and it's powerful. That's, I like that. That may be the short blurb that we put at the beginning of this to get folks in. That's the soundbite right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the reasons I like it, Chris, is because it reminds me that every situation, while we know our tools and philosophies and principles, every situation is different and it requires that you think about it. And that's how we've been able to scale lean across healthcare, multiple industries, right? Not just manufacturing.
I think that a lot of people forget that the first or the secret to lean and continuous improvement is engagement with the people. You need their thoughts. You need their input. It's not about you telling your thoughts. It's about you asking the questions to get their thoughts out.
Absolutely. You are spot on, right? They do that work day in and day out.
Well, one of my goals for this podcast is to help other lean leaders resonate with your experiences. So can you tell us a little bit about how or why you chose this profession?
Absolutely. So the reason that I chose the profession is because my very first introduction to lean at that time in my career gave me a sense of fulfillment and meaningful work and being able to make a difference. And that just so resonated with me that I wanted more of that and more of that and more of that. So,
yeah, I need to do that again everywhere else I can.
Everywhere I go. Like, I can't just work a routine, rudimentary. I know I have to be able to have that feeling. So
for me, it felt kind of like a life preserver being thrown to me. I was a young operations manager who had kind of been thrown into the fire. And my mentor came to me and said, hey, I think this will help you out. So I'm going to send you to learn something. And he paired me with a peer that had a lot of experience with lean continuous improvement. And he taught me side by side, not in a traditional learning environment where you have an instructor and a learner. He was like a learner coach peer. And Trevor, if you're listening, thank you. But they saved me and taught me how to engage my people and taught me how to just net out all the noise and focus on solving the problems that people are facing, keeping them from doing their work.
Yeah, very similar. The plant that I was working in, I was working as a industrial engineer. We had horrific quality, horrible delivery. We were the sole source of this part for GM. And our plant manager, much like you said, we have got to figure this out. And we started just boots on the ground, hands dirty, getting it in. And in about 18 months, that particular facility became our model site, where people actually came to learn from us. And so it was a tremendous experience to see that amount of change happen in, what relatively a short period of time, right? 18 months is not that long for a full lean transformation.
And if you think about it, that was just the first step. A lot of people think, oh yeah, it'll take us 18 months. It's like Toyota's been doing it for 100 years.
Exactly.
But you get a lot, you get the first benefit. It's like cleaning up a room. Once you pick everything up off the floor and kind of put it where it belongs, it looks cleaner, right? But there's the stuff and the behaviors that make sure that things go back where they belong that really help out with the improvement journey.
Absolutely.
Well, can you share with us what you consider maybe your biggest career setback or pitfalls with Lean? Because you've had a lot of experience and success with Delphi and with some other companies, and now you own your own company to help out with this, but there has to be a moment where it just didn't work out the way you intended it to. What did you learn from that?
So, I had to really ponder this one. And I would have to say that my biggest fear early on, even after that experience with that plant, was as I moved around helping other facilities and learning more, I think there was a period where I had this epiphany that I made lean and lean improvements about me, what I wanted to learn, what I wanted to do. And it was as I matured that I learned that I was leaving people behind. So I'm sure you've heard that quote, right? If the student doesn't learn, the teacher hasn't taught. And that just slapped me in my face because I realized I didn't build in learning and sustainability. I was more of a taskmaster. Let's go in, let's Kaizen, let's get it done, let's make this improvement, and then move on. And so I think upon reflection, that for me probably was the biggest mistake that I made. Like, how many people could I actually have influenced and taught and coached had I really understood and known that that was part of my role? I appreciated it from senseis and welcomed it and yearned for it, but I didn't reciprocate until I got a little bit more mature.
Now, how has that experience influenced the work you do today?
I lead with it.
Okay. What does that look like?
So what that looks like for me is I lead with being very observant as a coach, even if they haven't welcomed or invited me in as a coach, so that I'm learning and listening and observing them, not just the process.
That's important, seeing people in their environment. I mean, it's almost like lean anthropology or organizational anthropology, where it's studying the culture in their environment. And there are lots of cultural undertones that you can pick up on just with the language that they use, the way they interact with one another, the behaviors. Yes. You go for a walk and just spend time out in direct observation, you'll learn a lot more than you ever could in a conference room or a presentation.
Absolutely. And you just basically stated it. There's so much power in observing and how people behave, how they react, how they respond to problems or challenges, right?
There has to be an aha moment for you where you're like, this is what I need to be doing with my career. I mean, obviously you found that because you've started your own company doing that. But what was that first aha moment of lean and continuous improvement is my passion and what I should be doing in life?
I can't tell you the specific day, but it was around 2003. I was working with Delphi as a supplier development engineer, and Rick Harris was working with us, and we had a supplier, a tier one supplier to Delphi that just really took this and just ran with it. We were doing, I was basically living there, and we were, when they were able to validate that they had been such lean zealots that they were awarded new business, that's when I decided I'm doing this for the rest of my life. Like, this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life. I'm going to coach and mentor businesses, because not only did I see like the improvements that we look for, but now I'm seeing you're going to get a new facility. We're driving economic development. We're driving jobs. And so I saw this is way bigger than just some, you know, productivity savings and things of that nature. So that was the moment that I decided I'm a lifer.
Good deal. This is a little bit off script from what I sent, but I think it's important. One of the things I admire about you is that is you're passionate about engineering, you're passionate about helping. And I think that there are a lot of women in engineering that need good role models that they can follow, because I'm saying this as the father of a 15-year-old daughter too, but what advice would you give to that young female engineer who is starting out in her career and making her presence felt in an organization? What advice would you give to her right now if you had that opportunity to sit across from her?
Oh, okay. This is a place that's near and dear to my heart. So I would basically tell her that no matter what area you study, make sure that you develop your leadership capabilities, that you develop your executive presence, and learn stellar communication and negotiation skills. That's what I would tell my younger self.
Okay. I jumped around here because I normally ask that later on in the podcast, but okay. I felt it was just really important and powerful to talk about it now in the conversation.
It really is. Can I just share really quickly?
Yes, absolutely. Share away.
So there was a point where I was mentoring women in STEM, really advocating for women to go into engineering and telling them about lean and continuous improvement. And there was a point where I felt like a hypocrite because I saw more women leaving the profession that were already in the profession. And I said, you know, something's not right here. And I realized the gap was that women were struggling to exist and thrive in the environment because we knew our technical space. We knew how to do the work and how to get the job done, but we didn't know how to assimilate, I think, into an environment where we didn't have to fit in, but we became a part of the fabric of the environment. So that's why I started shifting and saying it's really about those soft skills.
I agree. I think it's important in all aspects of lean and continuous improvement that to be proficient with it, you need to be able to translate lean into business problems. I think lean folks, we tend to think in terms of lean problems and lean challenges and what tool do I use, but how do you translate that from the Gemba to the boardroom to describe I'm doing this work here now under this umbrella of continuous improvement, and this is what it does for your business results, or this is the business problem that it solves.
Absolutely. Spot on. Yeah.
And that's important. That's important for men, women, anyone in this work. Right. But thank you for holding space for other women to follow along. That's important to me that people know that they see someone else that looks like them doing the work that they love to do.
Well, if your daughter wants a mentor and she wants to work in STEM fields, you have her call me. I mean that.
I will. That is recorded. I've got it. And I'm going to,
I'm very serious about that.
So along those lines and talking about passions, do you have a lean or continuous improvement pet peeve or something you frequently see being applied or done wrong?
So I won't get into like the done wrong thing, I think, but my biggest pet peeve is when I hear people say, well, don't use the word lean or And the reason that that one bothers me is not so much about me advocating for lean. It just tells me that you're already starting from a place where you're closed. And so it makes me wonder if you're a learner, if you're willing to be a learner, if you're willing to be open, if you're willing to be coachable. And so that's a reason that it's a pet peeve for me, especially if I hear from leaders, because there are other people that are hungry for solutions to these problems that they deal with every day. So to just make this about a word or words or jargon, you know, and I respect it. I think there's a place for it, right? But that one, if you know, as I look deeper behind just the words, don't use lean, it sets me off. Just be honest.
That person is exposing their biases just with yes. With saying, yes. Hey, don't use that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. All right. What do you consider the most important thing that you've learned in your career journey so far?
It's kind of, I kind of mentioned it before, but it's to observe and to listen. And the observation is less about, for me at this stage, I'll say, it's less about just the process. It's really about observing the behaviors, the energy in the room. Is the environment safe for people to speak up and talk about problems? How does the leader communicate, celebrate? All of those things are the types of things that if we could come up with a list of waste around just that, the people element and change management and leading lean, those would be the things that we would observe in the same way that we observe the 8 forms of waste.
Wow. Hey, that makes so much sense. And when we think about waste, we also think about untapped human potential, and untapped intellectual capital. Yes. And there's, when you say don't use the word lean, essentially you're saying, I don't want to hear what you have to say. And you're cutting, you're committing that waste right there, then and there.
Right there. Oh. And you're setting the tone for the behavior. Even if you are going to come up with your own jargon, you're setting the tone for the behavior that's not really a tone that allows for openness and learning, in my opinion.
So for someone who is observing this waste occurring and they don't have the experience, background, and I guess confidence to challenge that up front, what's a quick tip or question that you could enable them to ask that would help out with that?
So when I experience groups having conflict around just being open, then I always go back to the problem that we're trying to solve. And so I always just go back to, well, what problem are we trying to solve? And if I can't get people to acknowledge that, then I'll say, well, what problem are we really trying to solve? You know, and it just takes people away from this kind of emotional churn and gets them back focused on, well, we really are here to actually solve a problem. And whether it's Lean, Six Sigma, Shane and Red X, whatever, right? At the end of the day, we have people that are trying to accomplish a goal and they can't because there's a problem.
I love that. That reminds me of the book, The Coaching Habit. And after I read it, I literally cut a piece of post-it note and I wrote out on it, what's the real challenge here? And I put it up at the top of the bezel on my laptop. And whenever I would sense that we were getting off track or people were trying to impose their biases or their agenda on a meeting, I said,
right.
Yeah, wait, what's the real challenge here? What's the problem we're trying to solve? So I feel validated that someone else does that, right?
Absolutely.
Well, we touched on this a little bit earlier in the conversation, but just to bring it back again, what piece of advice would you give to someone who's just starting out with Lean, Six Sigma, or continuous improvement?
So I thought about this too, and I said, okay, if I were just starting out and I knew how hungry I was to learn, to see this being successful, I thought back to something that, Pascal Dennis said to me he was on a webinar and I was asking about how to, you know, get the leadership involved and get them bought in and all of this. And he said, start where you are. And so awesome. That would be the advice that I would give to people. Start where you are and it will snowball. You will get the momentum that you need as long as you demonstrate success where you are, and it'll start to spread like wildfire. But if you try to push it on people, you're going to just be frustrated.
Oh, but that's the difference between push and pull.
Absolutely.
When you affect your own environment, I guess I would call it for most people, it's the 3 feet in every direction, wherever mm-hmm. they are, that they have the most control and say over. If you affect that first and make it a beacon for people to see, you're yes. creating pull, which we all know as lean zealots and practitioners, pull is always better than push, right?
Yes. Yes.
And you're creating demand for, hey, show me what you did there. I want to do that too.
Exactly. And it helps you be able to expand your ability to influence. Because a lot of times where you're planted, you can control that circle of control. But as you go further and further out, you need to learn how to be able to influence those folks. And so that's the importance of starting where you are, getting a little bit of success, and it will start to spread like wildfire.
I think the piece of advice that was given to me about how to become someone who can influence others was help them solve their problems.
Their problems.
Like just go to them and say, what are you struggling with? What can I help out with?
Exactly.
That generates like goodwill. And that's the most positive form of influence on the planet, is people perceiving you as someone who helps others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's when I realized that lean wasn't about me. Me as the practitioner, it was really about the people that I needed to be helping.
I think all of us reach that at some point in our career, though. There's a moment where I think that's where the level of continuous improvement, maturity switches into what I would call mature, lean adulthood, where it's, hey, it's not about me, right? It's not about what I do. It's about what I enable others to do.
Yeah, it's about service. That's when we become like servant leaders.
So for someone who's a little bit further along in their career, kind of that same question, what piece of advice would you give to them? And it may be something that someone shared with you recently.
I would say for the mature lean practitioner, I would advise you, if you haven't spent a lot of time around learning how to hone and improve your coaching skills, that's where I would focus. You know, as a mature, I'm constantly learning in the coaching space, constantly learning. And we have never been in a time like now where we have so much volatility and the acronym VUCA, right? Volatility, uncertainty, things are complex, and there's a lot of ambiguity. You think about companies in the supply chain space, they're trying to just leapfrog to technology. Well, you've got to be able, if you have a tenured organization that hasn't been exposed to technology, you're going to leave them behind, right?
So yes,
that would be my advice to the mature.
And don't get sucked into buzzwords. Like, if you're not looking at your data, you have no business looking at your metadata, right?
That's
and I know metadata is so exactly. It's the new buzzword, but go for a walk along your supply chain and understand where all the handshakes are and be a partner in a supply chain. I mean, that's how it's supposed to work.
That's go to the places that don't appear on the value stream map. That's where you need to go. All those decisions that don't appear on the value stream map.
They exist, and you won't find it yes. unless you start to map it out and talk
and
to people that are engaged. Yes.
That's right.
Do you have a favorite book, author, or mentor that you would like to recommend, Crystal?
So I'm an avid reader. I'm constantly reading. Right now, I'm probably reading 4 books at the same time. But there are 2 books that I'm advocating for. 3 great friends of mine. So one is The Power of Process. It's a new book by Eric Ethington and Matt Zako. They do a lot of work in the lean space around product and process development. They're good friends of LEI. And then Jamie Flinchbaugh, People Solve Problems. So those are the 2 books that I'm reading and advocating for.
So I'm not going to spoil it for you, but I read Jamie's book and I actually had him as a guest on the podcast and we talked about it. And My only criticism of Jamie for that book is that he didn't write it earlier.
Yeah, I know, right?
It is a great book, right?
It's been noodling for a while. He's a great person, so.
Good. I'll be sure to put links to the show notes page for both of those books for the listeners there. You and I both know that magic wands don't exist, but if they did, and you could wave it at anything that you're working with, what would you wave your magic wand at first?
So we're talking about lean. I would wave my magic wand at the, you know, that the top part of the value stream map, the information flow.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I would go.
Okay.
Right now, and just also say on my side, you know, when things are in crisis, everybody wants to fix it. Everybody wants to help, but it also leads to a lot of misdirection because so many people are giving direction. And what's happening on the supply chain side is we're having supply chain conversations at the board level. And so when you start getting edicts rolling down or decisions rolling down from people who may not understand the day-to-day challenges, then you get a lot of confusion, a lot of frustration, a lot of misdirection.
And along with that, if you were mapping out what that communication at the board level looked like, what would it look like on the value stream map? And I'm imagining if you saw it, you would quit doing it.
So you know how the arrows point down from like the, you know, the database, right?
Uh-huh.
A lot of arrows going back up. One. And then I'd show a lot of people coming down to do some Gemba walks. That's two. And the third thing is I would extend tiered management or huddle systems all the way up to the top of the organization.
I think that for folks that don't fully understand that tiered management structure all the way through, it's really about communication. It's about not only communicating the challenges and problems, it's also about communicating your celebrations and successes so that other people can go do the exact same thing in their part of the organization.
Yes, Chris. I just talked to a mentor, old boss of mine. He retired as after being CEO at Diebold. And he said, Crystal, we were talking about the supply chain stuff. And he said, you know, I used to sit in my office and look at my glass wall. This was where he had all the metrics. And he would say, that's how I would be able to pinpoint where we needed to go focus. He still is a huge lean zealot. But, you know, he said, and people would think that I was crazy just staring off into space. And he was like, no, I'm looking for the gap. So at the CEO level, he was looking for the gap and then able to have communication with his leadership team about, you know, what to go look for.
And I imagine it would start out with a question like, hey, help me understand this, right? Yep. I mean, every successful person in the C-suite that I've ever met, the one thing they all had in common was they asked incredibly powerful, focused questions.
Focus questions. Yep. And he was, even when I worked under him, he was a huge Gemba person.
Mm-hmm.
So very huge Gemba.
So for clarification, going to the Gemba means actually walking on the Gemba. If you're in a manufacturing plant, the catwalk doesn't cut it. Like you can't walk over the Gemba. You have to walk on the Gemba.
On the Gemba. You have to go talk and engage, ask questions. Yes.
So one of my favorite Gemba behaviors that I've ever seen is when I worked at a small beverage company based out of Atlanta. One of the lean process improvement managers at a facility up north, he had a pink high vis
safety
vest on, right? Mm-hmm. Safety vest. So instead of a yellow or an orange, he chose pink. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, it's like, why pink? He goes, first of all, it creates a question. Why are you wearing pink? So it creates engagement. But over time, when people saw him walking, they knew that they were going to have an opportunity to have a conversation with him. And if you don't see pink that day, people knew. And it drove accountability to him that he had to go for a walk. Otherwise, folks would figure out he hadn't been on the floor.
Yep. I love that. I love that. Yeah. Am I still there?
Yeah. I don't walk on floors anymore, but I did get a pink high vis. But I'm a pretty big dude, so like they had to custom order it. It wasn't like on the rack for them to, you know.
Yeah.
Well, Crystal, how can people connect with you if they want to learn more about what you do or if they have a question for you based on what we talked about today?
The easiest way, of course, is LinkedIn, and it's Crystal Y. Davis. And just send me a message or a connection request. That's the easiest way. And then my website and all of that stuff is on LinkedIn as well.
So I know that you're in the process of pulling some really cool stuff together. Can you talk a little bit about what you're planning on right now and maybe give folks a little bit of a tease what to expect?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So one of the things that I'm working on is hosting some executive roundtables on these supply chain challenges and having some real tangible conversations. My goal in those conversations is to get like-minded professionals together, treat it kind of like a mastermind. But then I also want to bring the perspective of that everyday person and what they're experiencing to the conversation. And so I'm going to be actually forming a group on LinkedIn. So stay tuned, follow me on LinkedIn, stay tuned there for those announcements. And then the executive roundtables will be a small, intimate, invitation-only activity. So we'll be inviting folks from the group to participate.
Well, Crystal, I've been a big fan of the work that you've been doing in this space for a long time. I follow you on LinkedIn. I always find the posts and the things that you share insightful, and they make me a better thinker. So thank you. And on behalf of the podcast audience, thank you for sharing your experiences with us today.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you, Chris, for keeping the conversation about lean leadership going in the podcast. And you always have the most insightful guest on, and I absolutely love listening. Been listening for years, actually. So I'm happy to finally be on. Yes.
Yeah. This is where I should say, "Oh, stop it!" But please keep going. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes, I have. So I'm super excited.
Yeah, well, you actually. I'm glad that. Me. Do what now?
You actually inspire me in the podcast space. So, yeah.
Oh, good deal. Well, and then we got to give credit back to Mark because Mark is the one that held that space for me. So Mark Graven.
Yeah.
Thank you again. And so you brought up podcasts. Give a plug for your podcast here to the folks here that are listening.
Yeah. So my podcast is the Lead Lean podcast. So I like to say leading is a verb. It means you have to take action. And so it's Lead Lean podcast, and it airs on most podcasts. I think about 8 podcast stations, as well as we go live on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. at IBGR.network.
That's so awesome. I will definitely put a link to that show in the show notes page. Folks, be sure to go check it out. And Crystal, thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I want to thank Crystal for being a guest on the podcast today. I know I got a lot out of our conversation, and I hope that you did as well. Be sure to go to the show notes page at leanleadershippodcast.com. Check out the links to learn more about Crystal and how to connect with her if you have a question about what we talked about today. As always, I welcome your feedback on how to improve the podcast. If you like the podcast, make sure to go to podchaser.com/leanleadershippodcast and leave a rating or a review for the podcast. Thank you for listening, and until next time, seek progress over perfection.
Thanks for listening to the Lean Leadership Podcast with Chris Burnham. Get more info, resources, tools, or connect at leanleadershippodcast.com.